Minnesota Ham Radio Store to close. The details in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with the rain report for October 6th. Independently owned ham radio stores are few and far between. Radio City, located in suburban Minneapolis, Minnesota, is scheduled to close in early December. Radio City has weathered a number of business storms since opening its doors in the 1980s. Its owners are Dan and Maylene Fish. The store is a rarity in ham radio circles. The couple who own it share the ownership 50-50. For the next two Rain Hamcasts, we'll hear about some of the challenges that owning and maintaining a successful brick-and-mortar ham store present. It all started for Dan Fish, KB0XC, in 1973.
I think I became licensed 1973 or so when I worked for Ball Corporation, the electronic display division here in Minneapolis area. They were making a lot of noises about moving the plant to Colorado. I wasn't particularly excited about moving to Colorado, nor was my family. So Wayne Green, I don't know if you remember Wayne. Wayne was writing about satellite television, and so we decided to go into the satellite television side of the business. It was brand new. We thought nobody knew nothing. That ought to be a good place to start. That's how we started this business in 1982. We were incorporated as a little company called Earth Star Communications. When they decided to scramble, we made the election to not follow that side of the business. I just wasn't in the mood to be an installer for the various companies that were doing the smaller dishes and so forth. And by that time, the forward momentum of Ball Corporation was pretty fixed. So we moved into amateur radio then in 1984. Our first HamFest was in Chicago. We drove down from Minneapolis area and read the books on the way down about how they all worked. It was kind of an interesting experience. So that's how we got our start. We've been doing it ever since, going on 34 years this year.
How did you determine to switch to ham radio as opposed to two-way radio?
Oh, golly, I don't know. It just two-way radio sounded like too much monkey business. Filled with a lot of rules and regulations, and it was fairly controlled, and there were literally 40, 50, 100 two-way radio dealers, and I thought that was just a little too much competition and didn't appeal to me. That was simple, the short and long answer of it.
Do you remember any of the model numbers of the rigs that you were selling?
We started out with Yaesu, FT-23, 757. There was another store in town called TNT Radio.
I interviewed Bob
Trover.
Yes, about TNT and found it to be rather fascinating and illuminating about the ham business that I, as a ham, knew nothing about. I interviewed him in 1987.
He failed in 86. He had Kenwood Radio and ICOM, I believe. And then we had Yaesu and we had Alinco. When he failed, that mustn't have been too pleasant a failure because we couldn't even get Kenwood to talk to us for years and years and years. We didn't acquire the Kenwood name until 1993.
Have you carried anything from Tentec?
I never did carry anything from Tentec. Tentec elected to go factory direct about the time that I came on. We have sold a few pieces of Tentec as used product, but I've never even had a conversation with Tentec. When they went to NoCo Tech, 89, 90, Evelyn Garrison came out from Washington to set us up to handle that particular product line. The ICOM 028T, stuff like that. They were an interesting company as well. And then by 93, we had all the lines, and we continued to grow up until the big collapse in 95, I believe, the spring of 95. And around in there, the bubble broke. The new no-code bubble broke. The business slowly turned into pretty much what it is today, although what it is today is clearly different than what it was in the 90s.
So. How is it different?
Oh, my goodness. It's just, I'm very lucky. I have 22,000 people in our database. We have acquired and worked with some of the most collaborative, brightest people in the United States at Radio City. And we don't have every customer because many customers are only interested in their experience and the lowest price. And so it takes a kind of a unique customer that we end up with is much more collaborative, much more hobby building, much more concerned about the overall strength of the hobby. So that's kind of been our direction for the 34 years that we've been doing this. And so we do a lot of little shows up here. We go to Iowa. We used to go to Wisconsin. We used to go to Illinois, but there are tax issues in those states. So after a couple of years in Illinois, we just elected to discontinue going in that direction. Iowa and Minnesota are principal areas. Well, now with the taxes changing and the Supreme Court authorizing all states to acquire taxes from all sellers of product across state line, we're going to see yet another change. I have no idea how the retailers in the United States are going to handle this. As an example, out of Illinois, when we parted company with Illinois, they had 3,700 and some different tax increment situations in that state because you could put a street light in Wheaton and they could charge local sales tax to recover the cost of that. But if you came and sold something in Wheaton, you didn't know what that tax rate was. And if you were audited, you'd have to pay that tax, $3.47, plus maybe a $15 fine. And there wasn't a database that I had that was big enough to handle that. So it's just not worth it. And that's going to happen across the entire United States. They're going to have to figure out how to resolve that. But that's no longer my concern because we've chosen to say this is a good time to retire.
What was the most difficult part of the business other than the varying tax issues?
I don't know how to answer that question, to be honest with you. I think in general, all businesses today are more challenged by competitive aspects of being a brick-and-mortar business, competing across a landscape of a bunch of people renting space in a Quonset hut and Black Duck. You're competing across the landscape with different service requirements, different cost of operation, and so forth. And so what we did is we just turned our back on that and said, we will sell on the web at what we think is a reasonable price, and we will enjoy the company of those that support us, and those that don't won't particularly miss us. So we just stuck with the collaborative side of the business. We also added astronomy in 1995, 96 also. So we supported that group as well. And we do a little solar work and a lot of books and so forth. So we chose to go on that side and support HamFest. The growth of the hobby is directly related to the growth of HamFest. And clubs need to figure out how to control their growth and attract new people. And so supporting those HamFests became kind of an important aspect of our building, of that relationship. And we put annual events on also to support that and give people justifiable reason to continue their purchases.
You're listening to the thoughts of Dan Fish, KB0XC, who, along with his wife Maylene, own Radio City, a Minnesota ham radio store that is throwing in the virtual towel after 34 years in business. We'll hear more about Dan's three decades of experiences co-owning Radio City in a moment. This is the Rain Report. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
two times a year, you could either buy the best price in the world if you were an Icon, Kenwood, or Yaesu user. And we'd had an annual tax-free day where we would offset any purchases with a in-store credit equal to the tax you spent that day. But as you move along, the competition always gets more difficult. Today, your biggest problem is that the manufacturers have made elections to work with significant higher volume dealers, and those higher volume dealers have the benefit of lower cost. And who would ever have thought that we would last longer than Burkhardt Radio or amateur electronics in this environment? So that's how the landscape has changed, and I continue to see that going for some time. I don't know where it'll end up. It's up to the amateurs to figure that out.
Was there ever a time you considered the idea of having multiple locations?
We have multiple locations in a nested manner. We have collaborative stores in Lentini Electronics, Universal Radio, Associated Radio, Main Trading Company in Paris, Texas. We had a couple others who have since retired, and KGI Electronics in New Jersey. And we procure product together, and we share information and share, general insights. We've been able to group much of our postages and so forth throughout the years. But now, with the way the business is, the manufacturers such as ICOM and Kenwood, they prefer working with single entities. And so HRO with one headquarters will have better leverage than we have. That's still an action that we participate in. But it's not as effective as 12 or 13 store capability of a ham radio outlet, for example. And even DX now is moving to multiple locations. I think they have three, perhaps. And even Gigaparts has got a Las Vegas, I think, outlet. And then they also do some things with supplying Amazon with certain outlets. See, there's also a shift in who your customer is. My customer is still an amateur radio operator or a person that wants to be. I have very little interest in supplying radios to the wild, wild west of anybody who wants to buy a radio and gets on and operates or wherever the heck they want to do that. I just choose not to participate in that. The manufacturers have operating expenses as well, and they're trying to offset. If you go back over time and you take a look at the way the manufacturers used to operate and the way they have to operate today, I don't want to pin a tail on the donkey, so to speak. Everybody in today's market operates in a manner that is best for their personal nutrition. And so they've chosen to operate the way they have. And it's a lot easier for them to operate with one store like HRO or one store like AES used to be, or the way they tend to operate today, have one set of billing addresses and supply 10 or 13 times 12 to, whatever, how many outlets they have in one store. And in exchange for that, they will allow different discount systems. Well, in a small market, if you have a different discount technique, it doesn't take your amateur radio operator real long to figure out who's got the best price. So if you're buying by price alone, that becomes quite obvious. And so that's why if you follow that trail, I consider it financial suicide to go off in that direction. It doesn't keep me up at night. So a shift in the way everybody is satisfying market demands.
You made reference to HRO as a single store, even though they have 11, 12 locations. That in itself gives them a whole lot more buying power than you ever could.
Dang, you're sharp. Yes, and of course, that's the way it is. It's a funny business. When you're a supplier, you have to decide how to market to the business. As far as ham radio goes, I don't know how big ham radio is. I mean, I can make a wag and say it's a $100 million business or maybe a $200 million business. I don't know. As you know, amateur radio operators in the United States amount to approximately 0.25% of the population. So there's probably as many people selling yak fur as there are amateur radio operators who are selling product. So kind of give you a little perspective on volume. So it's not like you're selling rubber tires or white wool socks or whatever. This is a modest volume business. It's like selling drone aircraft, and that's a hobby business, and this is not particularly unusual. So you make business decisions on how you're going to approach that marketplace. And yet, in this is now becomes down to a highly personal opinion. Like I have operators throughout the United States that I talk to. Well, I will say, well, FT8, which is an operating mode, that's not real ham radio or whatever. And you have to go back and look at the way we have progressed from Hiram Percy and a 20-mile ground wave conduction of some unknown frequency to send CW of a very hummy nature to the next station. So here we are in a world where we can work EME now with 100 watts. So to me, the Hiram Percy model of furthering the art of communication, and we got distracted from that throughout our years of modes and equipment and whether you could or could not fabricate or build your own equipment. I mean, we're in a world now that would you hazard a guess that 40-50% of your new operators are millennials that are in a 400 square foot apartment with maybe a 10-foot porch. And so do you think they're going to have a three-band beam in that thing? No, they're not going to. So we have to explore alternate methodologies to support the expansion of ham radio.
This has been the first of two excerpts from an interview Raines Hapali, KC9RP, conducted recently with Dan Fish, KB0XC. Dan and his longtime wife, Maylene, have decided to close the doors of Radio City, a Minnesota ham radio store that has outlasted a number of other ham radio stores. How did they do it? We'll find out next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2018 Rain. All rights are reserved. This weekly Hamcast updates Saturday morning on therainreport.com and Saturday evenings immediately following the amateur radio newsline on WTWW Shortwave out of Lebanon, Tennessee on 5085 kilohertz. Now for Rain founder and producer Hapali, KC9RP, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming!